Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Königsberg, which was the capital of East Prussia, which is nowadays Kaliningrad, and which since 1945 then was conquered by the Soviet Union, by the Soviet army, and well, we were expelled from Königsberg, from East Prussia to Berlin.
What part of Berlin did you live in?
Well, we went to West Berlin those days because close friends of my mother lived there. My father was killed in the war in 1945, so a year ago. And my mother took my sisters and me to West Berlin, where we had friends. But those days, there was a separation between East Berlin and West Berlin, not as strict as, of course, after erecting the wall.
So, and your profession, are you, I read that you were an attorney, a lawyer?
Yes, I studied laws and economics, and after my studies, I joined for a couple of years the West Berlin government, and later on I moved to the Federal Court of Audit in Frankfurt, West Germany. And then I worked a couple of years for the United Nations in New York, in Addis Abeba, in Botswana, and well, that's it. I think in Turkey we once went there. And I got a phone call from Erfurt, which is the capital of Thuringia, where I am living nowadays. In 1990, why not to join after the unification of the two German states, the efforts to help the East Germans to build the administration and the government. So I was surprised, but it was so attractive and exciting for me. Since I have stared at the wall for more than 20 years, so after the wall fell down, I said, now I go east. And my children always remember me that I always said, when the two German states became united, I will go east. This is my story. So since 17 years, I lived in the former German Democratic Republic, in the DDR.
And where did you study? You said in Berlin. Was it at the Freie Universität or was it east? The Humboldt? Is he Humboldt in the east?
After my explanation, there was only the conclusion that I studied in Berlin at the Free University, Freie Universität. But I started my studies after having joined the military service in Hamburg. So I studied first two semesters, as we call it, semesters in Hamburg, and then I moved to Berlin. Some months before the wall was erected. So I experienced the building of the wall in Berlin.
All right, so
First of all, I would like to emphasize that it's a wonderful idea to have this interview today, because today is the 9th of October, and you may know that 20 years ago, mass demonstrations were held primarily in Leipzig,
Leipzig,
which
yeah,
is
the
close.
Monday demonstrations.
Yes, Monday, which is close to Dresden, and against the communist regime. And to me, To me, this day is also a very important day in the post-war history of Germany, because this is Monday or Tuesday demonstrations initiated the collapse of the German Democratic Republic. I mean, and then 4 years, 4 weeks later, the wall fell.
Right.
So the 9th of October is a good occasion to have an interview about all these topics, isn't
it? It's a coincidence,
Yes,
that's right.
Good.
Wow, exactly 4 weeks later, that's
yes,
kind of
it's
amazing.
Falling down off the wall.
Right. Okay, shall we begin?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, were your parents politically active? Were they part of any political movement, or do you remember hearing them talk about the war or the Nazis?
Yes,
or...
of course. As I have mentioned already, my own father was killed in the war in Belarus, White Russia, close to Minsk. That was in 1944. And then my mother married again, and my stepfather, he was a member of the Christian Democratic Party, and I don't know whether my mother was also a member or not. And he was politically, in so far engaged that as he participated very emotionally in the political discussions, because this generation after having lost the war, I mean after the Second World War, of course, were the ones who were asked to rebuild Germany. And it, so far, it was always lively discussions in our family.
Mm-hmm. So did you said you moved to West Berlin. Did you have family or friends in East Berlin when you moved there?
Well, my family had relatives as well as friends also in East Germany, and in particular in East Berlin, we had an elderly lady who was a close friend of my mother. But my parents lived in close to Bonn, and later they moved to Cologne while I was in West Berlin. And well, the two German states which were founded in 1949, they didn't have that strict border. So my parents often went also before the wall to visit relatives and friends in East Germany and the later German Democratic Republic, which was at that time not so difficult. You just showed your identity cards, and then you could move.
Back and forth, yeah,
yes.
To East Berlin. So you did go into East Berlin,
yes,
before the wall.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I moved from Berlin in 1950, and I came back to Berlin in 1961. Before the wall was erected, there were a couple of months left, because I think it was May 61. I continued my studies in a free university in West Berlin. And so I went to East Berlin to see museums or to visit museums or to go to the theaters. And, of course, you may know we had a lot of what the East Germans called the border crossers, people living in East Berlin but working in West Berlin as well, young people living in East Berlin and studying in West Berlin, since we had three big universities in West Berlin also.
So if you were in Berlin in 1950 and came back in 1961,
Yes.
what had changed between those 11 years? How was East Berlin 10 years later? What was it like? Was it harder to go back and forth between East Berlin and West Berlin, or did you notice the people were different, or was it more police, or how was it different?
Well, I think the control was of course stricter. You may know that in 1958 there was a so-called Berlin ultimatum, which was launched by the Soviet Union. Demanding a demilitarized West Berlin. So all people moving from West Berlin to East Berlin were stricter controlled. And then, of course, there was also this traffic between the East and the West had, to a certain part also interrupted. On the other hand, we could took our bikes and go through the Brandenburg Gate, but of course we had to. There was sometimes a routine scrutiny of registration and ID papers and so on and so forth. And the whole situation in East Germany, of course, especially after 1953, there was this uprising in East Germany, became worse. That's what we also experienced. I mean, you have to realize that on one hand, the cost of foodstuff in the East was far lower than in the West on one side, but on the other side, they couldn't get all these things they wanted to. I mean, we are always joking when we say they dreamed of bananas.
Right. Yeah, it was really hard to get banana, or you couldn't get bananas in the East.
Mainly you couldn't get, yes. And although Khrushchev and the East Germans were boasting of the USSR industrial might, saying that this country would soon overtake the most advanced of the capitalist societies in the production of material wealth and so on and so forth. But I think there was entirely a difference as far as I experienced myself. As I mentioned already, these border crossers, they were always threatened by measures by the East German by the East Berlin authorities, because they were regarded as profiteers and parasites who lived in East while holding jobs in one of the Western sectors and getting good money. And so these border crossers were a great issue.
Yeah, I can imagine. So let's go up to the point where they actually start building the Berlin Wall. Since you were in Berlin, what was it like to see them start building the wall? Do you remember what you were thinking or what you were feeling when that happened?
Well, of course, it came all of a sudden. So nobody, I mean, except the Secret Service Agency, the Americans or the Germans or the French, they maybe were informed. But I think the people, it came all of a sudden, and I still remember that we got it via the radio station that a part of firstly it started that some S-Bahn, which stands for Stadtbahn. So that the traffic between West Berlin and East Berlin and suburban localities in the GDR was being then suspended. And S-Bahn trams connections between the eastern and the western sectors were being cut, and then we got the information that in particular in front of the Brandenburg Gate they started with these barbed wire business, although it was not more than, I would say, a chicken wire fence, something like that. But anyway, the guards were there and so on. And, of course, we started our protesting, and we shouted, and some there was also some violence, of course, as well from the youth, as well from the adult peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And there was really a shock. It was something like a shock, yes, because all of a sudden a family was divided, let's say, happened also to our fellow students. I lived in a student hostel in West Berlin, and in this student hostel there lived also a lot of students from East Berlin. I mean, their parents lived in East Berlin, and they, for a couple of weeks or a special day, they stayed in West Berlin in the student hostel. So then the wall was erected, so they couldn't come to follow their lecture. They couldn't come to pick up their goods. I still remember that they had. Special rooms where they let their books and their manuscripts overnight, and then they went back to their families in East Berlin. So the wall came, and all these things still were in these West Berlin student hostel rooms. So we started to bring it over. So this was a situation like that.
Wow. So you had to decide where you were going to live. They said the wall's going up, so you need to either decide if you're in West Berlin or East Berlin. Or people, I mean, did people think that... Do you think they knew that it was going to be so final, I guess? I mean, do you think people took it seriously, or they just thought, well, this will be a hindrance, but I can go back and forth? Do you think people knew how serious it was?
Well, I think that nobody of us believed really that it will last for years. We thought this business will over in a few weeks or in a few months, because we thought, well, the Allies and the occupying powers, they will assist us to remove this, but. No, we didn't believe that it will last forever. So, as far as my remembrances, I would say that many people thought, well, let's wait a few days, let's wait a couple of weeks, and then there will be a solution. That's among the people, I would say. That's with the thinking of the people. After a while, of course, the people in East Berlin had to decide whether to stay or not, or whether to come over to the West. But of course, you have to imagine that they lived within their families, they had their friends, so it was not so easy just to say, I move. And but after weeks, of course, and after months, there were hundreds and thousands of refugees, and so the escape helper business started from the very beginning on.
So once the wall went up, did you travel to East Berlin after that?
Well, we could go there because we had a West German identity card. One has to understand that people living in West Berlin, there were two ID cards. The West Berliner themselves, they had a green ID card, but the same design and the same words, while the West Germans studying in West Berlin or working in West Berlin, but mainly having their homes in West Germany, they had a different ID card. So they had a gray one, while the West Berliners had a green one. But once again, same size, same words, and so on and so forth. So we took our gray identity cards, went to the border, showed the control, the ID cards, and then crossed the border and went to East Berlin, while the West Berliners couldn't do that. That was a difference.
Okay. So did you have a lot of friends in East Berlin at that time?
Well, as I told you, I lived in the student hostel, so our student fellows from East Berlin were mainly our friends. I would say there were a couple of them, let's say five, something like that, with whom we communicated quite often and so on. And of course, we started the discussion. We could go to East Berlin. The East Berliners couldn't come to West Berlin. But then we started in East Berlin the discussions, of course, whether to help these people to come over or not. I still remember very emotional discussions among a number of students studying theology, and they said, "Well, we have as real Christians, we have to be here. We have to help our countrymen, and not just." Across the border and go to the West. And this impressed me a lot. So these people decided, among our student group, decided to stay.
Oh, to stay and help people.
In the eastern part of Berlin and declaring clearly they wouldn't go. They have to be here. They want to be finish their studies, in particular of theology. So they had this Christian approach to stay in East Berlin, while others said, "No, I have to study in West Berlin. I want to be a lawyer or I want to be an engineer. And now I am under pressure from the East Berlin government side, so I go west."
Mm-hmm. Could you call and write letters to people in East Berlin in 61?
Yes.
Okay, so it wasn't, in 1970 or 1980 that was...
It was much more difficult,
right.
Yes, or much more controlled. But I would say to 60 to 65, something like that, it was not as strict as... Although a lot of people flew and escaped, and of course the East Berlin Ministry of secret service,
the Stasi, yeah,
which was of course our our biggest enemy on the peak of the Cold War. And they, of course, were interested in the letters and in the telephone calls. And I myself, I have studied a lot of archives. I mean, after the unification, which is open mm-hmm. to a certain extent, is open to the public or to researchers. And you won't believe it. So many things happened to families and to individuals by these ministry.
Yeah. Did you find anything about yourself in the
records? Oh, I have a big, big file. Yes, it's and I was really laughing when I read how they described my outfit. I mean, they stated I have a certain type of nose. I don't know whether you know the German word Stupsnase.
No, Stupsnase.
Stupsnase. You have to look it up in a dictionary. So a Stupsnase is a tiny nose which goes a little bit up. That's
okay.
What we call a Stupsnase. And I think my nose isn't like that. So just to explain, there were so many details. They even described where my mother came from, and it's really ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, so I think maybe we could move on to the Tunnel 57 group.
Yes, maybe you would allow me to explain first that we started tunnel digging before Tunnel 57. Tunnel 57 was in 1964. Our first tunnel was in 1962. This tunnel wasn't successful. Then we started another one. This was successful. Then we started the third one, which was, let's say, the predecessor of the 57, which was also successful in so far that three girls came through, and then the Tunnel 57 happened.
So Tunnel 57 was the fourth tunnel?
To me, yes. Okay. To me, not in Berlin, of course. I joined digging four tunnels with my friends, while others had other activities and so far. And I don't know whether you know that in 1962 there was a tunnel which they call today the Tunnel 29, because 29 people escaped, and this tunnel is also called the NBC tunnel, because they let the NBC in the tunnel, and NBC filmed activities, and these tunnel diggers, most of them I know closer, they got money for that.
Oh.
Because money was always always a big issue. We need food for the helpers. We need transportation to go to East Berlin to inform people willing to move from east to west. So whom we call the runner, people who went to East Berlin in order to inform people now, maybe today or the day after tomorrow, there is a chance to escape. These people who we called runners, they of course had to telephone, they had to use taxi. Then we needed within the tunnel electricity. We needed some, hammers and what is the English word for schaufel?
Oh, something. Shovel.
Shovel, exactly. And
lights and
yes. So money was always a big issue, and so these guys approached, or I don't know, I think the NBC people approached the group, so they let them in, they filmed, and it was later, it was this is a very, very famous American film producer was told by the government, we don't let you show the film in America because this would affect the interest of the German government. Because we always were interested in not letting all these things be known by the East Germans, of course. The
right.
methods and the people and the connections and yes, this was already in 1972, the so-called Tunnel 29, and I don't know, I forgot the name of this American film producer, but this was a big story mm-hmm. those days.
Well, did you know the other people digging tunnels at the time?
Well, of course, I knew my own friends, and but there was a certain, let's say, a tunnel digger community, and so to say. We knew each other, but of course not by our complete names. We had nicknames or we had code names. For instance, my code name was Pigeon, and a friend of mine is Blackie, and there was Fox, and all these kinds of things. We knew some of the activities, not all of them, but some of the activities we knew, especially my group.
Mm-hmm. Did your family know you were digging tunnels?
No. Family was far away from West Berlin. But there was one occasion I still remember, because this was the first time I saw my mother weeping. That was at the end of 1963. We went to the whole family together with friends went to Austria for skiing, and then I got two telegrams, one from Hamburg and one from West Berlin, asking me to come as soon as possible to West Berlin. In order to go to East Berlin and to try to open a certain door in an East Berlin house where we wanted to have ended our tunnel. And I was the one who was experienced with these special keys. What is the English word for that? Dietrich. So if you... a special key to open doors.
Mm-hmm.
So I went there, and then I said to my mother, listen, New Year's Eve has to be celebrated without me. I have to go to Berlin. She asked me, why do you go to Berlin? I said, I have to help some people. And then she became aware that I did a dangerous job and started crying.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did you, the people that you helped escape through Tunnel 57, how did you know them? Were these students that you had known before the wall came up? Or were they friends of friends? How did you meet the people?
Well, there was a number of people interested in escaping. So there were friends, but there were also, let's say, the family members from girls or from boys who already escaped. So they said, "Okay, we dig the tunnel because we want to get to the west by my fiancé or my friend." But then later on, especially in the tunnel 57, the political parties, especially the Christian Democratic Party, was subsidizing by giving some money the tunnel activities, because they said, "We have political friends and we have political representatives of our party in East Berlin, and they have to come to West Berlin. They want to come to West Berlin." So in so far, we had, I think, tunnel 57, a list of nearly 200 people who were ready to come through this tunnel. And then you know the story that the tunnel, after 2 days, had to be ended. So what did we do? We went to the, of course, we had the addresses. We furnished with the West German identity card, went to East Berlin, and we met the people there. Of course, this was also a risky business, and well, it took us hours and hours, and you should know that we also, there were foreign students who helped us. The foreign national must be back to West Berlin at 2 a.m. in the morning, while we West Germans, we had to be back at 12. So when things are very urgent, we sent some of our international friends from, I don't know, Great Britain, American, or so we went there, we informed there, we gave them instructions how to go, where to go, at what time, what code words are used, and what to bring with. And so the so-called runners, Läufer, they were as important as tunnel diggers themselves.
So you weren't a runner, but you were a tunnel digger.
I was both, of course. Everybody was more or less both, except the people who were already escaped. Of course, they couldn't go to East Berlin. I mean, the East Berliners escaped, then later on helped our group to dig tunnels. Or we did also some other activities. In the very beginning, we used passports, and then also we brought people through sewers. Mm-hmm. You know what a sewer is?
Yes.
Yes, this is a sewer system. Especially we West Germans, at that time, we worked as tunnel diggers or as runners, or we tried to help our friends having moved from East Berlin to West Berlin. But in the meantime, of course, we had also to study, or we had to meet our girlfriends, or to visit our parents. So this has to be done, of course, also.
Yeah. So how did you choose the spot for the tunnel, where you were going to start digging?
Well, especially as far as the tunnel 57 is concerned, we rented a bakery, which was already had already finished its work. We rented which was there were I think at least 8 or 9 big cellars. Because we had to take care of all the sand, which was the result of the digging, as you can imagine. And of course, in the very beginning, there were only, especially in the I remember the first tunnel, we need only 25 meters. Because at the very beginning, when the wall was not as high as later, and when so sometimes the wall led through one street, so you have of the East Berlin side the houses, and then from the West Berlin side the houses. So we started in a West Berlin cellar, then we dug, let's say, 25 meters, and we tried to get in a cellar of East Berlin. This was, of course, also very risky. While in tunnel 57, we could see from the roof of the West Berlin house in the street of East Berlin. And so we decided to take this and that house. And so this was the decision-making process, and we had people observing the street in West Berlin as well as in East Berlin.
Mm-hmm. So it was from a bakery in East Berlin to a house in West Berlin.
No, exactly, vice versa.
Oh, a bakery in West Berlin,
yes.
A house in East Berlin.
Because there are only a very, very few tunnels. I would say maybe 3 or 4 from East Berlin to West Berlin. Because in East Berlin, there was a strict control. And after certain years, the distance, let's say from the East Berlin house to the wall became bigger and bigger, the distance. I mean, firstly, the people and they also demolished houses close to the wall in order to get.
Yeah, so you couldn't dig.
Pardon me?
So you couldn't make a tunnel. It would be harder.
Yes, absolutely, and so sometimes people really are asking, yeah, well, was the tunnel from the west to the east or from the east to the west? No, it was always and mainly, of course, except maybe these 3 or 4 tunnels from the west to the east. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the people that you helped escape to the West, did you stay in contact with them after they made it over to West Berlin?
Of course, we took care of them at the very beginning. Firstly, they went to this Marienfelde. This is the this was a camp where was a refugee camp where they were interviewed by the various secret services, the Americans, the British, and the French, of course, and then finally the Germans. The Allies tried to, well, to find out. Are they really escapers? Are they really refugees, or maybe are they spies? So they had to be interviewed sometimes for days, and of course the Americans and the Allies, they wanted also to know some details of the East German situation. They were asked how is the mood among the East Germans. Have you seen any military movements? So it was a tough job. It took sometimes more than 4 to 7 days. I still remember the Americans. They had their a secret office in a very charming residential area. Mm-hmm. And the abbreviation for the American was P9. P was the abbreviation for the street, Podbielski Street number 9. So when our friends came back, we always raised the question, how was it with P9? And then they told us their story. Yes, of course. And then the people were in West Berlin, and they some of them had relatives, had friends, so they were assisted by the people in West Berlin, and they continued their studies, or they started working again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long were you in Berlin before you moved? How long were you in West Berlin?
Well,
you moved from West Berlin. How long were you there before you moved?
Well, I moved in 1986.
From Berlin?
From Berlin to West Germany, yeah, to Frankfurt.
Okay. Well, so you were there a long time.
Pardon me?
You were in Berlin a really long time.
Well, I was in Berlin more than 25 years altogether. Yes. So it is, ich bin ein Berliner. I have met your president when he was in Berlin, as well as in front of the Rathaus, the town hall, as well as in front when he came to our university.
Oh, so several U.S. presidents. You mean Kennedy?
No, only Kennedy. Only.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Well, and then I also met Robert Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
I took some nice shots. And I think, I was also in Berlin when Reagan came.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Tear down this wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so great.
Yeah. Were you in Berlin when the wall fell?
Yes. No, I'm sorry. And 7 days later, as I told you, I worked for the United Nations. That time I was in Addis Abeba in Ethiopia.
Ah.
And there was a funny story. I always listened to BBC in the morning, and while I was getting up, I heard a story from the BBC describing how they just put the wall down. And so I went to my colleagues in the coffee shop and said, "Listen, I have heard a nice story. It sounds like Orson Welles." But I couldn't believe that there is the reality, because we in Addis Abeba got only a few news from what happened in Germany. So because we got an information letter from the German embassy, but only a couple of days later. So we were not really informed what was going on in Germany. And then in the afternoon, the Africans came to our table or in our office and said, "Hello, congratulations! The wall in Berlin is right now falling down." And because these people, they have a certain feeling for nation building, and they congratulated us, and we did not know exactly. So a few days later, I went straight to Frankfurt. I flew to Frankfurt, and my wife picked me up, and I said, do you know that in Berlin the wall is falling down? And she was, of course, laughing, because they knew already what is happening in Germany.
Yeah, wow.
So I went there a few days later, but I still was the witness of this very, very impressive and emotional get-together with the East German fellows. And we were often, believe it or not, we were often crying, because the people were so happy. And the people were so it was really unbelievable.
Was the reaction the same? Do you think people in East Berlin were happier or crying or more upset than the West Berliners, or do you think it was the same?
I would say the ordinary people, that was the same. At least a few weeks, and then late. I mean the people, let's say, working in the East Berlin government or working in this Ministry for Secret Service, of course they had to know now that their time was over. Of course they weren't happy. I mean the regime were collapsing, and so the people, the government people, they saw, well, I'm going to lose my job and all these kinds of things. But the ordinary people, the first days, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable, yes. And I also was a funny story. A few weeks later, I met at the plane American group consisting of nice ladies, and said, well, we go to West Berlin, we have to see the wall now, and so on. They were so amused that, yeah.
Yeah. So did you ever think that the wall would fall?
Not really. Not really. On the other hand, we couldn't believe that will last forever. That this happened in such a short time. As I mentioned before, this collapse and this falling of the wall was initiated by the people in Leipzig today, 20 years ago, when these mass demonstrations under the slogan, we are the people, we are the people, started. But Erich Honecker, who was the head of state of the German Democratic Republic, had stated, I think it was in 1988, in 1988, he said, this Berlin Wall will last for at least 400 years. And then, of course, Gorbachev came to East Berlin to join the celebration of the first of the 40th anniversary of the founding of the German Democratic Republic, and his famous words, which I don't know how to translate exactly in English, but you may better know than me, something like, if you are too late, you will be punished by the reality. And so it happened.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember going into what it was like when you went to East Berlin or East Germany for the first time after the wall fell?
what my feeling was?
Yeah, what, oh, I mean, was it different than you remembered, or the mood of the people, or the buildings? What do you remember? How did you feel when you went to East Germany for the first time?
Well, first I have to explain that I couldn't go to East Berlin since 1964. Because a very close friend of mine was captured in East Berlin. He got 10 years of prison, and during this trial, he had to give all details about me. He was under such pressure that they knew everything about it. So I decided not to go to East Germany, as well as not to go to East Berlin. Mm-hmm. So I myself cannot really compare what happened in the meantime. But after the falling of the wall and after the unification of the two German states, I personally decided I go east now, because I could go east. I continue my professional work in East Germany. And But before that, and this was also the main reason, because I didn't know the other part of Germany, with its beautiful cities, which is beautiful landscape, very famous cities as Dresden, Schwerin, Leipzig, Brandenburg, and so on and so forth, or the coast. The Baltic Sea. Mm-hmm. So this was also the main reason why I went to East, the former DDR. So I can't really, I cannot answer your question very precisely. When I went the first time to East Berlin or East Germany, I guess there was, of course, a lot of progress in the meantime compared with 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yes, but I myself, I couldn't witness, because I wasn't allowed to go to East Germany. I would have been captured also. I had already my now I found in my files. What is the word for that? If you try to get somebody this official document.
Oh, a warrant, an arrest warrant, or
yeah, I think so. Yes, a warrant, arrest warrant, exactly. Mm-hmm. I found it now in my files. Please, wherever you can get him, get him. That was stated. But I was lucky. Which meant that while I stayed in West Berlin, I always had to fly from West Berlin to West Germany. I couldn't use the car. I couldn't use a train. So the business was also costly.
Yeah.
But in 1987, there was the 750th anniversary of both parts of Berlin, and so they granted us a certain amnesty, so we could use a certain way from West Berlin to Hanover, which is also close to the border, mm-hmm. via car. And then I took the first time my family, and we all felt a little bit. Yes, we were afraid. And the funny thing was, my daughters, they were still small kids, and when the East German guard asked my papers, one of my daughters asked my wife, listen, do they know that Daddy dug the tunnel in Berlin? So you can imagine that we were afraid they are going to arrest me then.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, these kids. Funny thing.
Yeah. So, how do you feel about the 20th anniversary coming up of the wall falling? Can you believe it's been 20 years?
Well, it is still for me an exciting event. I don't know whether I told you or whether you have read once that I have to explain that one East Berlin guard was shot after the second night, and he was killed. And firstly, the East German government accused us to be the murderers of Egon Schulz, the East Berlin guard. Mm-hmm. But after the unification, we found in the files that he was killed by his own men. Of course, not by intention, mm-hmm. but there was a... So I initiated a couple of years ago because for me this was a very, very tragic accident. This guy was of the same age as we were. We were something like 22, 23. He was mm-hmm. 21. So he's also a victim of the wall, of the Berlin Wall. So I initiated together with my friends, with escape helpers as well as escapees, to commemorate him. And if you go to Berlin, please go to Strelitzer Straße 55, and then you will find at the wall of the house plaquette, what is the word for? Made of bronze.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There you can read how it happened and so on and so forth. And so far, because you asked me whether I still remember after 20 years the falling of the wall. Of course, I do. I have these friends together. We get together regularly. For instance, a few days ago, we were together in Berlin. We are doing some research. We are trying to publish a book next year. So it plays a certain role in my life, these things which happened 20 years ago. Yes, you are right.
Well, why do you think it's important for people to still talk about the wall and still talk about East Germany?
Well, I think we should never forget this was a communist regime. This was, in a certain sense, a brutal regime. There was a war. In other parts of the world, we have wars. Let's take Jerusalem. Let's take the United States, the border of Mexico. Let's take other parts of the world. So we should always be aware that walls are the hindrance to for people to live in freedom. So we have to be aware that if you take Vietnam, if you take Korea, or these are one nations and the people worldwide might wish to live in one nation. So no walls should be erected. Let's try let the people come together and let try to live without walls and so forth. It's also for young people very important to know the history of these parts of the post-war history, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think so. And so far, the 20th anniversary now next month of the falling of the wall is a good occasion also to reflect what it means if there are walls among human beings.
Yeah. So are you going to do anything special for the anniversary?
Well, it can be that I give a lecture in the university, which for me is much easier in my when I'm a native speaker. and I show some interesting pictures mm-hmm. from those times. I have photos, I have slides, uh-huh. and I want to have also a lively discussions with the young people.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while I'm a little bit surprised that younger people do not know exactly what happened, especially when they are from East Germany. When they were only, let's say, 10 years old, when the unification happened,
mm-hmm.
Of course, they were still the kids of parents who experienced the dictatorship in East Germany. And I think we have to tell the history. We have to clarify also certain topics to make things clearer, not as missionaries, but just to give facts and figures as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good occasion with young people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
in the university they are interested in, and I think that will happen for me on the 9th of November.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for
yes,
doing this.
Yes, it was my pleasure.
I think it was great.
I think, once again, I think it was a great idea to have this interview, especially on this day.
Yeah.
And it is the 9th October. When you have a look at the German TV, which I think can be easily done by you, then you will find that the people in Leipzig are right now celebrating the anniversary.
Oh, I'm sure.
With a big festival or something. And our mm-hmm. president of state, Mr. Köhler, was also in Leipzig and
mm-hmm.
gave a speech.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well,
well,
nice to talk to
yes,
you.
Yes, you
too. And wir bleiben in Verbindung.
Yeah.
Wir bleiben in Verbindung.
Sehr schön.
Okay.
Also.
Also. Bye
tschüss.
Bye. Mach's gut. Tschüss.